That was Uman. I mean, what I hear on the news is...
Yeah, that was the news. There's no sign of anything going on. Business as usual. It's all... Whether it's taking place, it's taking place. It's not taking place on the ground. It's taking place wherever it's taking place. It's taking place in the media. It's where it's taking place.
Well, namely the Russian and European media, not the American media.
If it's not one of the states, then it's
not. Right. So I just ignore that. But I had a question.
Yes.
Rav Dror was a Shir. He was talking about the Arab Rav just briefly. Are the Arab Rav part of the Sony nations?
No. 70 nations of the 70 nations.
And
Israel.
What about Israel?
The 70 nations are the 70 nations. And Am Israel are Am Israel. The Arab Rav. They were. It depends how you want to call it, define the Arab Rav. They were Mitzrayim who left. But the question is, when they became Erev Rav, they were called Erev Rav only once they joined Am Yisrael. At that point, they're actually part of Am Yisrael, but not part of the 70 nations now. They're a separate... They have... to an extent, a counterpart to Am Yisrael. The souls of the Erev Rav, huge souls. Gemara writes they're from the 972 generations that existed, 974 generations that existed before the world was created. And their souls were too strong, too powerful, to make it in this world, and therefore they were the souls that were in the generation of the dispersal, Tower of Babel, and generation of the flood, causing all the problems. Huge, powerful people. So Gemara says that Hashem saw that if he put them in one generation, they would destroy the world. What happened with the flood and what happened with the generations of dispersal. So he spread them out into all the generations. They were then, so to speak, reconstituted in Mitzrayim. And they came out with Am Yisrael. That's when Hashem worked it. He wanted them to be purified. They were purified. Those who can be purified will be purified through being part of Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael is the kli, the vessel that's going to purify them too. They're creations of Hashem, very powerful creations. And they can be, according to the Gemara at least, the Vilna Gaon says that a portion of them, a minority, he says, can be rectified, even though they're very difficult souls, very difficult Hashems. So, that's what's happening. The question is whether or not that was just how we interpret that. Maybe that was only then, and Rabbeinu came along and said he can purify anyone. And maybe that through the Tzaddik, even the Erev Rav will be purified. Depends how a person understands those passages. Don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. Time will tell. Either they'll be purified and they'll come back to being a genuine part of Am Yisrael, or they'll be separated out from Am Yisrael and destroyed. There are two options. Currently, they're part of Am Yisrael. They're not part of the 70 nations. They're part of Am Yisrael. There are 70 other nations. But they bear the title Yisrael. And Nachman says anyone who bears the title of Am Yisrael has the ability to be rectified. So they're currently part of us, with a very difficult Gilgal, very difficult carnation, right? Because they're living in a, as Ram Jor described, they're living in a prison that they just want to break out of. They can't stand being in this body. It's just unacceptable. So they go around making trouble because they want to break free. That's why their tikkun is very difficult, and it may be that they can't or they won't. They try. I don't know. If they want to do it. They don't want to do it. They can. They can't. No, that's beyond us. Well, that's not our job. Our job is to do what we can. Bezrat Hashem, we're not part of the Erev Rav. We could well be. We don't know who is and who isn't, each of us. But even if we are Erev Rav, and certainly at least according to the Gra, then there's the proportion that can be rectified. For sure the proportion that can be rectified are going to be rectified through their own choice, free will. The person wants to be holy and pure. Hashem's not going to stop him. So even if I've got that feeling that I want to rebel against everyone, I'm not interested in Hashem, I'm only interested in myself, I'm furious with this, I don't like it, I don't want to be here. Whatever situation I'm in, if I have a desire to be rectified and purified, I will be. And those who don't, or who appear not to, are the ones that we see as causing the problems, for sure. Hashem needed a vehicle for problems in the world and problems within Am Yisrael. If we had it all easy, we wouldn't get anywhere. We wouldn't be doing our job. We have no tests and nothing to grow from. So we needed a vehicle. So that vehicle is the Erev Rav, one of their jobs. So they cause problems. We cause problems for ourselves, for other people. Self-hating Jews, or all that sort of stuff. So we have to deal with that. Part of that is the Birur process. It helps us realize who we really are. Right? When we see other people doing things which we don't find acceptable. So the good that we should take out of it is not to say, aren't those people bad? But is to see the good in myself. Baruch Hashem, that I'm not like that. Thank God that I actually believe that I've got emunah, that I don't act that way. It's part of that Birur process to see the difference. Right? The good only has relevance if there's evil to contrast it with. I need to see evil in order to realize that I'm good. Otherwise, I'm just me, just the same as everyone else. I'm not good, I'm not bad, I'm just parrot. You can't go through your life being parrot. You have to know who you are. You have to know that you're good. How do you know you're good? Because you can compare yourself to something that's not good. And you can see, oh, Baruch Hashem, I'm actually good. I don't do that. I don't go around doing that. I don't have those thoughts. Baruch Hashem. So that's helpful. So for me, I can take chizuk from that. And I should. I need to recognize the goodness in me. I shouldn't go around with false humility. False humility is, oh, I'm terrible, I don't do anything good. It's shtuyot, it's lying. Not true. I do good things. It's false. True humility recognizes that I am good. I have good parts of myself. And when Hashem shows me something that I'm not doing, then it's good. I have to recognize that. Oh, Hashem, thank you, Hashem, that you didn't make me like that. You didn't give me the tendency to want to destroy the world. Oh, Hashem, thank you very much. I don't have that. You know, first off, thank you, Hashem. I'm very grateful to Hashem that He didn't give me that tikkun. Could have been me. Right? I could be sitting in the Knesset, standing up and arguing about some shtuyot. I could be, why not? Who says that I'm going to be sitting here and not there? Right? Thank God Hashem didn't give me that neshama. Gave me this one. Oh, Hashem. Right? First of all, I'm very grateful. Thank you very much. I don't have that tikkun. Who knows what I would be like? I might be much worse than him. Right? You stick me in that situation with his neshama, I might have destroyed the world by now. Who knows? I could be crazy. Maybe he's doing really, really well. I don't know what he's going through. He could be doing really well. He could be a lot worse. He might be holding himself back, fighting every morning to not be such a complete idiot right today, or whatever his struggle is. I'm not saying that's true. But it could be. Who knows? I don't know what he's going for. No idea. Anyway, Tov, is that okay?
Was it a valid question?
What's it? I didn't understand what's it based on. Well, what's behind the question? What do you want to know?
Well, Rav Dror was simply saying about the Arab Rav, and I needed to clarify that they weren't part of the Semitic nations, that they're just...
Whether or not they're considered to be Jews, or...
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So, don't know. My understanding is they're not, but I could be wrong. It's not so clear. The information available on the Arab Rav is not so complete. It's not so clear. Especially in English, it's quite limited. So, and there's also different opinions, because it's not clear. You have to pull it out of sources like the Zohar and whatever, different places. And there's room for interpretation, especially in our day and age. In our day and age, we don't have the wisdom, we don't have the chokmah to really understand what the Zohar means when it says Erev Rav is whatever. I know, whatever you take, wherever you get your source from. To interpret that properly with our understanding of stuff, pretty lucky to actually fluke to get a good interpretation about what's going on there. So unless it's coming from someone like the Vilna Gaon, and even then to understand what the Vilna Gaon said is also an option. What did he actually mean when he said blah blah blah? So we're really clutching at straws, and what can we do? Okay, Yofi, Gana Shalom. God of Peace, Arashon Marash, the Hebrew version of the book, page 211. Ein kitzurei derech, there's no shortcuts. Ki b'derech ha'emet, ein kitzurei derech v'dimyonot, elat tzurichim la'sig kol davar b'emet. In the path of truth, there is no shortcuts, and there's no illusions. Rather, it's necessary to achieve everything only by way of truth. V'havodeh hamiti biyoteh imata b'derech emet olo. And the true measure, the best true measure of whether a person is on the right path or not, hu hashalom, it's his peace. Like here in Shabbat. K'mo shekotov haver pasukim b'tanach. Like there are written many passages in the Tanakh, she machbirim yachad et hashalom yet amet, that join together in those pasukim the concepts of peace and truth come together. Come on, he gives an example. Like it says in Zechariah, the hamet v'hashalom ahavu. Vod habet says, for example, the peace and the love. Sorry, the peace and the truth. You shall love, and other examples like that. באמת, אם היה אותו תלמיד מגיע לדרגה הרוחנית שרצה, הייתה אשתו הופכת לו לעזר. והיה לו חי איתה ועם ילדיו חיים יפים מאוד. So we're still in this story. We're still in this story about this poor Talmud, this poor student, who got divorced because the first wife he was married to wasn't living up to his expectations in her teshuva process. He was making teshuva really fast. He wanted to get on with his life, get on with serving Hashem, and she wasn't interested. So instead of taking the Rav's advice to pray and to work on himself, he divorced that wife and got another one who was already on the path, who was already strong in her Yiddishkeit, and he thought that would help him. Turns out, obviously, that wasn't the right advice, and he rapidly fell from his level of Avodat Hashem to doing pretty much nothing and not getting out of bed in the morning, until the second wife was so fed up with him that she divorced him, and then he had nothing. So Rav Arash writes, he wasn't really holding at the level he thought he was holding, right? Which was evident from the fact that when it got difficult with his second wife, he dropped it all, because it wasn't real. And he would have only achieved the real level that he wanted to achieve by being with the first wife and struggling with the issues and working together to build their Judaism together, and then he would have really had it. It would have been true. He would have really acquired it. So he says here there's no shortcuts. If truly this student would have been at the spiritual level that he wanted to be at, then his wife would have turned to being his helper, right? Rather being against him, Ezer Kenegdo, she would have been Ezer, she would have been helper. Vayachaitan, he would have lived with her and her children, a wonderful life, right? If he was really on that level. The wife reflects the true level of the husband, right? That we said the wife is a mirror. So in this situation, we saw that the wife wasn't on the level. He was steaming ahead in his Judaism, and he saw his wife wasn't interested. So it was a telltale sign here that actually he really wasn't holding that level. And it's true, he wasn't there yet, because it wasn't being reflected in his wife. If it was true, it would have been reflected in his wife. His wife would have started keeping the laws that she was should be keeping. And that's what he explains, that really his job was to stay with it, to stick with it, to work on himself, and his wife would automatically eventually get to that level. Why? Because he would automatically eventually get to a real level of actually holding that position. But he wasn't there yet. It was all it wasn't too strong to say it was all imagination. He certainly wanted to do it, but he hadn't yet acquired it. Right? It was a level of being up here in the head and not being here in the heart. Initially there has to be that way. Whenever we take on something new, we take it on up here in our brain before it comes into our heart. Right? We learn about something, we understand it, we recognize the concept, we get the idea, we grasp it, but that's all mental. It's all in my brain. It's not really in my heart. Someone tells me, you know what, there's a wonderful thing called Tikkun Chatzot. You can get up at midnight and say the midnight prayers. It's very moving and you feel really great about it. Oh, and if I hear about it, I think, oh, that sounds interesting. Maybe I'll do that. I'll try it. Yeah, sounds good. Sounds, right? It sounds good. So I get up and I try it. And yeah, it was really good. I might even do it, you know, the next week too or whenever. But after a couple of times, I won't carry on. I'll do it once or twice. Because it's not in here. I only did it because it was a good idea up here. In my head, it sounded good. And it did. And I did it because it sounded good. It wasn't in my heart to do it. So once it started becoming difficult, I dropped it. But if it was actually in my heart, if I prayed on it, Hashem, help me do it. I really want to do Tikkun Chatzot. I really, really want to do it. It's very difficult for me to do. Please help me. Hashem, I really, really, right? And then it comes into my heart. Now it's part of me. I really want it. So now when it gets difficult, I still do it. I've got that power, that ratzon. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it's difficult. I'm tired. Okay, I'm tired. I'm still going to do it. I'm still doing it. So I really want to. It's now part of me. So I prayed on it. I worked on it. If it's just a good idea, it sounds good. So if it's relatively straightforward, easy, I'll take it or leave it. It's good. It's good. It's not good. So while something's just an idea, sounds good, I like it, yeah, possible, yeah, maybe, yeah, sounds good, why not? So it's easy come, easy go.
I've heard that you can do teshuva on your deathbed, right before you die, and you're accepted before right to shema.
Yeah, 100%.
Or, I've also heard that you can, work on yourself, do teshuva, go out into the woods, speak to Hashem. So, I'm curious, if a guy does that for 1 hour a day for 40 years, and the guy says teshuva with his last breath, are they going to the same place?
Okay, so it depends on the teshuva they do. There's two types of teshuva, there's a million types of teshuva. But I'm saying two types, just as an example. There's a million types of teshuva, but you'll understand from the example. The teshuva is, Hashem, I'm really sorry, please forgive me, thank you very much. Teshuva, according to the Rambam, I admitted it, I regretted it, I asked for forgiveness. Teshuva, that's what it says in the Bible, I did teshuva. And then there's teshuva that every day, scream Hashem, right? That's all teshuva, it's completely different. They're both called teshuva. They're both in two different places in Shemayim. It's possible to do both of those on your deathbed. On your deathbed, oh, I'm about to pass away. Someone says to me, you know, you should thought maybe just make teshuva, it's just worth it. Hedge your bets. You know, why not? What are you going to lose? Just read this. Right, trust me. And fine, whatever. Yeah, I hereby confess. I'm really sorry. Yeah. Right. He could do that. If he did some teshuva, it's going to help him. Or he can realize that he's got, I know, a couple of weeks left to live, a couple of days left to live. And he spends the next 24 hours, the next 3 days, solidly in prayer, regretting everything, screaming to Hashem, begging for forgiveness for my last 120 years, going through everything I did and regretting everything. And I did this, I was 5 and I stole some money from my mother's purse. Really, and he goes through this whole life and he makes a complete teshuva. It's also teshuva on your deathbed. So it just depends on the strength. But the problem is, and both are fine, and both you get to the same place. So what's the difference? So why bother? Because no one knows that they're going to ever get to their deathbed and be able to do teshuva. I don't know if I'm going to make teshuva on my deathbed. I don't know what kind of state I'm going to be. Mentally, physically. Right? I've got more things to think about than doing teshuva. I'm trying to stay alive here. The last thing on my mind is doing teshuva, thank you very much. I'll worry about that later. I'm just trying to stay alive. It might not even be something that you could interest me in. Never go to a person, right? Otherwise, if it was that easy, then we'd all be walking around the wards in the hospitals, tapping people on the shoulder, saying, by the way, I think you should do teshuva now. But it's not. You try that, you're going to get 1 out of 1,000 that says, oh, thank you very much, yes. Here, sit with me and tell me what I need to do. Because once a person's lived all their life a certain way, you can't turn the tank around on a that's charging this way and turn it around on a dime and head the other way. You just can't do it. And the body, you know, we know how to. We've got as far as it were, like trying. But if someone has lived their life all one way and now to admit that it was all wrong and all a waste of time and actually, right, and actually the reality is something completely different that I haven't acknowledged in my whole life until now, it's possible. It's just very difficult to do that. So, you know, if we want to make it easy on ourselves, we have to do shiva every single day.
If you know someone is dying,
yeah,
and you're with them, should you encourage them to do shiva?
Yeah, if you can, for sure, for sure. Can only help. Can only help. Look, if you know that the person is a rabid anti-religion and he's just gonna curse Hashem, right? You bring such eye, and he makes it worse for himself. So don't go there, right? You don't want to make it worse for him,
right?
So if for sure he's gonna react angrily and it's all nonsense, and how could you, right? And start cursing or whatever he's making himself. Digging himself a bigger hole than he's already in, and don't even go there. But if there's a chance that he might take it seriously, yeah, it's a very big mitzvah, a huge mitzvah. You literally saved his soul, literally. Right? It's a big thing. It's a big thing. Yeah, big brownie points. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, in doing tshuva, in terms of going back and focusing on where a person is at today, in essence, not being stuck in the past, but yet being able to know that in the past. We're talking about a narrow bridge in terms of not regretting the when does in essence, you talk about something like our death, to go back and do something that would be comprehensive, but somebody's somebody starts a process in starts to talk about an issue one time, and then it comes up. How do you know when something's clean without excessively going back into the past, but yet you can't leave it there? It's like a balance to not want to fall into sadness and any type of needless crime, but yet or needless complaining, or and not so much complaining, but needless to go back, but yet at the same time. How do you tell when it's really clean if you're still not sure that issue has been covered, Or is it to focus on, if you still have the issue, let's say today, that trait was inside you, can you go back from the trait today to comprehensively go back if you still have that inner flaw within you? And the question becomes, where do you do that,
so,
but yet not get derailed by the past?
So, I think there's two... I think there's two types of situation. There is situations in the past which are based on my me dot. There are situations in the past which are based on incidents, something that occurred. So, for example, if in the past I was very arrogant, I went around telling people what I thought of them and just being full of myself and whatever. I still have that today. So that teshuvah, I would say, is much more relevant for me to sort out from today's life. I need to do teshuvah on what's going on today, and I ignore the past. The past is the past. I can't undo it. How I was, how I acted, how I behaved. I need to work on my midot now. I still have those midot. I forget the past. It was, it's done, closed, book, finished. But if there were certain incidences, for example, I stole money from someone. It was an actual, right? So then I need to clear that up. I need to go and pay it back. I need to go and apologize. And I need to do something about it. But and then after I've done that, it closed. There's usually very little benefit in going back into the more than once or twice, right? Once I've actually gone through, done a cheshbon nefesh, spent time, choose a day, choose whatever few hours, and go through from childhood to present day, spend an hour or two going slowly through what I remember. Whatever Hashem wants me to remember, I remember. If I forget stuff, I missed out year 6, 7, and 8, can't remember anything I did then. Well, it doesn't matter. Hashem doesn't want me to know anything. 9 was terrible. Right? Hashem will put into my mind whatever I need to think about if I didn't come up. So there's nothing there. You're right. So I hit my sister with a stick. So I forgot to mention that in my teshuva, but it wasn't relevant. If it was relevant, Hashem would have reminded me at the time. So I go through the best I can. Once I've done, I'm done. Hashem knows I regret it. I regret it. I can draw a line and move forward. If Hashem wants me to go back and deal with it, He's going to bring it back for me. He knows I want to do tshuva. If I'm clear that I want to do tshuva, Hashem knows I want to do tshuva. If I go to the field and say, Hashem, please, I want to do tshuva, I want to clean everything up. And this is my best job, and I've done it, and I'm drawing a line now. And I'm leaving it to you, Hashem. Anything from now on, I'm not looking back in the past. If there's stuff I need to fix, then you need to show me. If I bring it back, show me, you'll have an incident. So I'll get a phone call, I'll get a voice out of the blue that I haven't heard from you. Something will happen. So, but we'll deal with it. But otherwise, I'm drawing a line, I'm moving on now. This is it, right? New life, everything's good, right? I'm drawing a line. We're moving forward now. And if that's not correct, if I'm missing, you still want me to do shuvah on something, so you're going to show me. But I'm not going to second guess myself and live in the past, because that's not the standard position. That's not normal, right? That's not our starting position, right? Our the general position is we do shuvah and we close the book and we're done and we move forward. Not normal to keep going back and think about maybe this, maybe checking, maybe no, maybe that. That's not the approach. Could be in a certain situation, a certain person needs to deal with something that they don't deal with. Then Hashem is gonna bring it back, because Hashem's not gonna let me get to 120 and not do teshuva I want to do teshuva. I'm not gonna stand there before the heavenly court. And they're going to throw the book at me and say, you didn't do teshuvah on all that stuff that you messed up when you were 20 years old. Right? But I wanted to. I was there in the field asking Hashem, help me. It's not going to happen. Right? And I'm going, oh yeah, you're right. We're sorry. We forgot that you wanted to do it. and that we hid it from you. It's not going to happen. Right? Hashem knows that what teshuvah I need to make. Hashem creates all the situations to help me do teshuvah. I have a genuine will to do teshuvah. That's clear. So I don't have to worry. I don't have to try and find the pieces of the jigsaw and try and fit them into place and see where I need to put this and I need to fix that and I need to... No.
Concentrate on today.
Today moving forward.
Today, in essence, the Polonia was doing a Polonia concentrate on his inner flaws he's carrying with him going forward.
Yeah. 100%. Right, and just like, right, a good proof is the Torah. Right, we saw that the brothers, Yosef's brothers, they messed up when they sold him. Right, they shouldn't have done it. They messed up. Hashem didn't let them go through their life not rectifying that. Hashem did all, made all sibuvim, made this right, so that they will come back and fix it. They have to work right. Hashem is dealing, he's sorting everything out. It's the stuff I had to deal with in the past. Right? I messed up. Hashem's going to put me in the same situation now and let me do it right. Right? He's gonna without me realizing it, right? He's fixing all the pieces. Right? Rabbeinu says he's not going to let any one of his people go without their tikkun. Right? Rabbeinu's going to make sure you do your tikkun. You don't have to worry about your tikkun. He's doing the tikkun. I'm just trying to wake up in the morning. I'm trying to make sure I try and listen to the Torah Shira on this, right? My job is just to try and deal with what's going on in front of me, in front of my face. It's not here right now. I don't need to worry about it. It's hard enough to deal with the life in front of me. Never mind trying to work out everything else. So, I think that's the correct approach. Okay. Tov. We didn't do a lot today, but we did a lot otherwise. Thank you.